Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Thanks for starting your week with us. According to the Republican National Committee, 160 black candidates filed to run as Republicans in local, state, and federal elections this year. As of last month, 120 are still running.
I'm Jennifer Ruth Green, and you and I aren't all that different.
The politicians pick American against American, rich versus poor, black versus white. I don't believe in that garbage.
What unites us is color. Red, white, and blue.
I'm Wesley Hunt.
I'm Burgess Owens.
I'm Herschel Walker, and I approve this message.
Now, there have never been more than 7 black Republicans in the House of Representatives at one time. And that time was back in the 1870s during Reconstruction, when the Republican Party was the party of Lincoln. But with a record 81 black Republican candidates running in House primaries this year, that may well change come November. The Republican Party hasn't been the party of Lincoln for a long time. It's now, by many measures, the party of Trump. And while the overwhelming majority of black voters cast their ballots for Democratic candidates at all levels, black male voters did give President Trump an increasing share of their vote in both 2016 and 2020. So just how black and brown is the future of the Republican Party? With me now is Dr. Leah Wright-Rigora. She's Associate Professor of History at Johns Hopkins University and author of The Loneliness of the Black Republican, Pragmatic Politics and the Pursuit of Power. Professor Rigora, thanks for coming back on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And also joining us is Brendan Buck, a partner with the political communication firm Seven Letter. Brendan was the press secretary for Mitt Romney's 2012 presidential campaign and former House Speakers John Boehner and Paul Ryan. Thanks for joining us, Brendan.
Hey, Melissa. Good to be back.
All right. So, Leah, put this in historic perspective for us. Are we living in a renaissance of black Republican partnership?
I wouldn't call it a renaissance, but I would say that it's certainly a moment that we should all be paying attention to. There have been other in the last 60 years or so, there have been other moments that mirror the moment that we're in right now, where there have been a lot of African-Americans that have run as Republican candidates. They generally have not done well when it comes to the general election. But what's different here, and this is what I would really point to, is the fact that the Republican Party is actually investing money, time, and support into these black candidates. And that's relatively new. There have been other periods of time where the GOP has done that. But in the recent past, even 2016 and 2020, if you want to look at it, the party has not been committed to that kind of thing. And in fact, candidates, including several candidates who are running right now, have complained about this. So for the party to actually be sponsoring, at the very least, about 81 black candidates, that's a big deal.
All right. So, Brendan, obviously the National Party does not take sides in a primary, but help us to understand how or if the National Party, through the RNC, sees value in having a more diverse slate, even if they're not choosing candidate A over candidate B in a primary race.
Yeah, often they're not choosing, but they play a role, and it comes through recruitment, and it's going out in districts and finding people there that they think might be appealing. And so they do have a role there, and I think that's part of it. I think this goes back to last cycle, the last election. Republicans did surprisingly well with Hispanic voters and did really well in races where we ran women, where we ran veterans, and when we ran Hispanic candidates. And I think this is an extension of that. They saw that perhaps here we have an opportunity to give people a different view, a different look of the party. I don't know that this is necessarily going to change the face of the Republican Party at all. I think you're probably only going to have a handful of these candidates in serious races where they have a chance to win. But the party clearly sees some value in projecting a different image of the party. Obviously, Donald Trump has cast an image that is obviously driven by race, very controversial. And I think this is at least a small attempt to push back on that.
Now, Brendan, I'm very much old enough to remember big tent Republican politics, you know, from George H.W. Bush and certainly with George W. Bush, this sense of, you know, sort of a future of the Republican Party being one that is more demographically diverse to represent a changing demography within the U.S. Also old enough to remember sort of shifts brought to us by Speaker Gingrich around seeing midterms not as just a local set of races that kind of all, you know, aggregate, but actually taking a national approach to the issues and the messaging that's on the table. So bring those together for me. Is the Republican Party this year taking a more Speaker Gingrich national approach to midterms or a more Democratic side, Tip O'Neill, you know, all politics are local approach?
Well, I think all politics are national, and it's been that way probably since Newt Gingrich. And Republicans are banking on that. Republicans are banking on the idea that the national environment is so bad for Democrats that it doesn't really matter who you run in some of these districts. They're going to sweep some of these Republicans into office. And that has often been the case in recent midterm elections, particularly the first year of a new president. So, you know, Democrats are certainly trying to personalize races. Democrats are trying to point out some of the more extreme positions that some of the Republicans have taken. But Republicans, by and large, don't want to talk about themselves. Republicans want to talk about gas prices, food prices, and a very unpopular president. And that is really what they're hoping will sweep them into power. And history has shown that that may just work.
So, Leah, let's talk about this sort of, you know, president with low national approval ratings. Again, national polls, right? I mean, regardless of whether we think what's driving what happens at the polls is national or more local, this is not a time when sort of, you know, the outcome of the midterms is determined by a national vote, right? It's determined district by district, precinct by precinct. So when you look at Black Republicans making a choice to run this year, is this about a kind of pro-GOP or is it about an anti-DNC? Is this about sort of, you know, being kind of over the Democrats at this point?
So it's a little of both. So the first thing is that the kind of Black Republicans that you see running in 2022 are very much going to be reflective of the national party, of where the Republican Party is right now. They're not really going to stray that far away from Trumpism, because to do so would risk, run the risk of not being supported, would run the risk of really alienating a good deal of the base, even in places where the base isn't made up of, you know, Trump supporters or Trumpy folks. You're going to see that it's just too much of a risk, right? There's no reward in critiquing the Republican Party as a Republican candidate running in the moment. The exception to that are areas that have a higher than usual concentration of African American voters, where essentially those Black Republican candidates need Black voters to win. I'm going to put an asterisk next to Herschel Walker because his strategy seems to be something else altogether. But in these other areas, like in Michigan, for example, you tend to see that these Black Republican candidates are absolutely running on the antagonism, this kind of increasing and encroaching antagonism between Black voters and the Democratic Party at large. And so one of the things that we know, and Melissa, you've written about this in your own work, is that African Americans, this kind of partisanship, this really extreme partisanship of that we see of African Americans towards the Democratic Party actually obscures really intense tensions and problems, longstanding problems. But we know that it generally manifests as African Americans either registering as independents or not voting altogether. And in some really small cases, and that's what we're seeing actually crop up in 2022, we do see some African Americans who say, you know what, I'm willing to give the Republican Party a chance, and I'm going to run as a Republican because I'm tired.
Well, since you cited my work, I'm going to take that as it's now on the table. So let's just dig in on that for just sort of two things that I've, you know, written in the past, and I just want to check with you on whether or not you think they're accurate in this moment. So one is that this notion that Black candidates within the RNC are not really in order to attract Black voters so much as they are to do two things. One, sort of you know, keep Black voters maybe from turning out for the Democrats, especially in a midterm, right? Not to be that excited about the alternative. And also that they are there in part to signal to non-racist white voters that it's really okay to cast a vote for the Republican Party because doing so does not indicate racial animus, right? As is sort of the language right now in the Trump era, right? That actually one can very much be a Republican without having anti-Black racial animus. Do you think that's part of what's going on here, or is this a new version?
So absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that the questions that I get asked all the time is, in an era of Trump, which is we've seen extremism, bigotry, xenophobia, racism, you know, you name it. Why is it that we're seeing more African-Americans or seemingly more African-Americans running as Republicans? And part of that is, no, actually, they've kind of always been there. They just have a bigger platform. But also because in these spaces, essentially, Republican strategists have determined that there are certain spaces where African-American Republicans can actually make a significant difference in a couple of different ways. The first one is cutting into African-American voters, right? There's an opportunity there, particularly amongst a very small cadre of Black male voters. The second, though, is exactly what you said, which is to, it does the work of essentially legitimizing or validating certain things that the Republican Party has put forward, but also reassuring voters, particularly white voters, that these people can't be as racist or as sexist or as, you know, as bigoted or as xenophobic as they appear to be, because here's a Black person that is essentially validating or legitimizing what they're saying. So it provides a kind of defense. And from, you know, we might say from an ethical standpoint that or a moral standpoint that's not great. That is really disappointing. That is discouraging. From a strategic standpoint, it makes absolutely a lot of sense. Because in essence, what voters do look for, right, at least non-Black voters look for, is this person somebody that I can trust? Can I look to them and be reassured that they're not racist? And in a lot of ways, Black Republican candidates provide that line of defense.
All right, we're going to take a very short break here. When we come back, Brendan, I'm going to play a little bit of speed round with you. I want to see how you're seeing kind of key strategies within the Republican Party for the midterms this year. Stick with us on The Takeaway for more on the future of the Republican Party.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
Hi, I'm Helga Davis. On my show, I speak with artists and thinkers about how to uncover the extraordinary in everyday life. People like musicians Brittany Howard and Sampha, Broadway director Whitney White, scholar Noli Way Rooks, and playwright Suzanne Laurie Parks. These are fearless conversations where we don't just meet each other, we meet ourselves. Join us. Listen to Helga wherever you get podcasts.
It's MHP, and I'm back with Dr. Leah Wright-Rigura from Johns Hopkins and Republican strategist Brendan Buck. We're talking about the midterms and the future of the Republican Party. All right, Brendan, let's do a little, it doesn't have to be that speedy, but I want to just go through a few things. So in general, for Republican candidates right now at all levels, is it run with Trump, away from Trump, or just pretend there is no Trump?
Probably the latter. I mean, to get through a primary, you certainly can't be offending Trump. But everybody knows generally that he is a burden in a general election. And so I think everybody wants to talk about Joe Biden, not Donald Trump.
Okay, speaking of President Biden, he's been saying Roe is on the ballot to motivate Democratic voters in the midterms. But we do know that there is a bit of a disconnect between Republican voters and Republican leadership, at least on some aspects of the legality and availability of abortion. Does the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs ultimately motivate or sort of, you know, demotivate, that's not a word, but actually discourage Republican voters from showing up in the midterms?
Yeah, I don't think it has a big impact on Republican voters. I do think it gives Democrats something to hold on to in terms of motivating their own voters. Republicans are not running on abortion politics. You know, they probably have to do and say the right things to win a Republican primary. But when it comes to the general election, you're not seeing very many Republicans running ads talking about limiting abortion access. And that's why, you know, there are a few things that have happened recently that I think may give Democrats a little hope. And I'm not saying that enough to hold the House, but the abortion ruling certainly, I think, woke up Democratic voters. And that was one of the big problems I see for Democrats, is that not just that Joe Biden is unpopular and things typically go bad for the party in power, but it's just that Democrats are not excited. They are disappointed. They don't have the motivation you typically need in a midterm election. Midterms are about enthusiasm, and there just isn't a whole lot of enthusiasm among Democrats. But the abortion ruling, I think, potentially could change that. I think the January 6th hearings may remind people that there is a choice in this election. Typically, midterm elections are referendums on the party in power. But perhaps now there's enough going on that can remind voters that Republicans are not somebody you want to be voting for either, you know, if you're an independent or a Democrat voter, and that could get you out. And then, of course, it's all the things that are happening in Congress. All of a sudden, the Democratic agenda is back, and you're seeing Democrats getting excited again. So if you're a Republican, you got to keep an eye on this, that you've been banking on the idea that Democrats are depressed, Democrats are not going to turn out, and potentially that could change soon.
Okay, here are a few Republican presidential names that I haven't heard in quite some time. Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush. I just don't hear them invoked in the way that, again, you know, a decade ago would have, or two decades ago, would have been sort of standard part of Republicans talking about and situating themselves. Are you expecting to hear anything about sort of the legacy of these presidents moving forward?
Not anytime soon. I mean, this is definitely Donald Trump's party, which is obviously not a novel concept. But even without Donald Trump, Trumpism is clearly prevailing. You know, I do think he's going to run. I do think he's going to be the nominee. But yeah, you hear a lot of commentary about, well, maybe now is the time where people are ready to turn the page, and you see polling that shows people are ready for, you know, maybe a Ron DeSantis. But it's all a lot of the same type of politics. Everybody is still rushing to be populist, to the grievance politics. And this is the big change in the Republican Party for the future, is it is trying to be a party for the working class, which is never really the role that it tried to play. It used to be, you know, your more educated, more affluent voters were a big part of the Republican base. Now educated voters are all voting Democratic. So that is a huge shift that I think is going to persist for a long time, and probably speaks to a little bit of why Republicans are trying to elevate Black candidates. This isn't necessarily a midterm play for this midterm, but maybe it's a longer term play to try to change the face of the party to be more about working people, running on this message that there are elites in Washington who are more out for themselves than out for you, and we can be a voice for you. And so whether it's Donald Trump or whoever it is, those basic concepts are still there. And it's a party that really wants to change who it is appealing to for the long term.
All right. So, Dr. Wright-Rigora, as I'm listening to Brendan, I just feel like I have to make this confession that when things are kind of tough politically, I do have a tendency to go back and binge watch the West Wing. I'm so sorry. It's true. I know every word ever spoken in the West Wing. And I'm right now on the part where there's a fight for the soul of the Republican Party, circa, right, whatever this is, like 2000. And Arne Vinnick has sort of emerged as this moderate Republican who is speaking across, lines of difference. And as I'm listening to Brendan talk about this sort of long-term vision for the party, I am wondering if we're at an inflection point here for the Republican Party. Is this sort of fantasy of Democratic, writers back in the early aughts a possibility for the very real Republican Party?
Superficially, yes. But in reality, absolutely not, because that's simply not going to work in the primaries. It's not what's going to take any kind of candidate that wants to be the front runner into the limelight. The Republican primaries are a very big hurdle. And we've seen over the last couple of years that the person that makes it to the finish line is not the one who is, the West Wing ideal kind of, moderate, middle of the road person, but instead is the person that can really traffic in grievance politics while simultaneously putting on a veneer of some kind of respectability. And so the Republican Party has for a very long time, really since the two parties kind of inverted, have chased this idea of having the ability to have, Black people, labor, and even, and even racists all within the same party. But the truth is, we're in a different era. That's not possible. They can't do what the New Deal did or what the Great Society did. And instead, what we're really going to see is, who are these new people that are moving into the party that just happen to have these racial identities?
Leah Wright Rigora is Associate Professor of History at Johns Hopkins University. And Brendan Buck is a partner at Seven Letter and former press secretary for former House Speaker John Boehner. Thank you both, Leah and Brendan, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.